Hello, and welcome to Be Indie Now, a new podcast devoted to independent game development. I'm Tobias Marks, their host. With me today is Devane Martinez.
What's up?
And Catherine Harris.
Hi.
So, I want to do every show with a question, and today's question is, should I make my game freemium or premium? Now, there's a lot of games out there that are just, you sell it, you get pay money, and they download it. But there's more and more games coming out where it's free, and you can optionally pay some money. This is especially popular in mobile right now. In fact, I'd say it's the most popular. In terms of sheer numbers of dollars, probably the most money is being made in freemium games. But does that mean that I should be making freemium games if I want to make any money at all? Can I make money with premium games? Catherine, you're making a new game right now. Are you going to try and do it freemium? Are you going to do premium?
So for my game, I personally don't want to do a lot of, work on my monetization scheme because I didn't make the game for the purpose of making money. I just did it for myself and really just to enhance my coding abilities. So for me, I think going the premium route is my best option, just having, a flat rate.
Well, if your goal then is to just have people play it, right? Like, you don't need to make money off it,
right?
Why not make it free then? Because then later on you could maybe add an extra level, more content, and then sell it.
True. So I will probably release it free and then wait a month or two, see if it picks up. And if it does, then I would most likely set a price on it by that point, or make new levels, but probably just set a price on that and see where it goes from there.
For games that you play, do you generally play freemium games or premium games? Do you tend to be more free ones, or do you tend to be more that buy the experience kind of player?
Right. I do all in or all out, so it's it has to be all free. I don't really buy the extra levels for freemium games. I'll just do the basic levels. Or for premium, if it's recommended by a friend and other people like it, then I'm well, there's something about it that people like, I'll pay that extra just to experience that quality game that everyone else seems to be raving about.
It makes sense. What about you, Devane? Do you tend to play free games more than premium games? What's your playing preference?
It really depends on what the game is offering. For one, I have played a lot of freemium games on my Windows Phone. I've actually paid for things for skins and, additional levels and whatnot, mainly because those games were things I wanted to figure out how to beat them. They usually were games that had a lot of repetition and took a lot of retries to master. And I'm personally a fan of those games, and I love to buy, more and more content just so I can mix it up a little bit, because I'm replaying the level over and over again, and I need to get something out of there. I feel like it's definitely a workable model, but one thing that I do look for in certain titles is how simple is the design. Because, I mean, there are how many different versions of, Angry Birds now?
Yeah, I think there's at least five.
Yeah,
right?
Something like that. And it's the same damn game, over and over again. But it's still very fun. They keep coming up with new level designs, which is, that's pretty much it takes the most time, is the reskins and the level design. And I feel like when it comes to, premium and freemium, stuff like that, if you have a good game design from the first game and you can just, make an entirely new title, quote unquote, and with new skins and new level design and still make money off that, why not? It's still sort of kind of using that freemium mentality, but just implementing it in a different way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't really thought of that, but Angry Birds, I'm not sure if you would call it premium. I think they sell the games a lot of times. They're making their money off of buying the experience, but they have light versions, and part of their popularity was the freer versions, but really, they're making their money off conversion into those sales. But it was also probably because they were early in the game. It was before in-app purchases became popular.
Yeah.
So they implemented them way later on with the Mighty Bird. And I don't think they make as much with that as they do with their full upgrade sales. But I guess it also brings up a good point, is that you don't necessarily have to stick to one type of monetization. You can have a premium game with pay extra premium content. I mean, that's like Call of Duty as well, and Battlefield are notorious for like the day one DLC where you can pay some extra and download that right away.
Definitely. And actually, speaking to, you know, console games and like Call of Duty and Battlefield, when it comes to their monetization, because I mean, it essentially is buying a premium for, you know, what they give you, and then, you know, premium later on. What I like and dislike about them, what I like about them is that they give you a real full and rich experience, like with the first initial, you know, $50 or $60, whatever the heck it costs when you first buy the game, and it can last you the entire experience if you don't want to buy anything else. And they give you that option to like get more of it, which, you know, I like that they give you the option. What I don't like about it is that when that option becomes a crutch or like a disability, like when you want to
pay to win.
And just certain things that other players are getting because their wallets are deeper, and because my initial capital that I gave towards the game isn't enough to them. Mm-hmm. And it does get on my nerves. It's a big contributor as to why I don't play a lot of those type of games, because it's the mentality behind their marketing and what they're offering me is like the big determinant of whether I want to or don't want to even put my money towards them. And I haven't bought a Call of Duty game since the first Modern Warfare because of that. And I'm just like, it's just not something that's up my alley anymore. It's like, if you're going to give me a game, give me it, and, you know, don't chastise me. Don't, you know, make me feel less of a person because I'm not going to buy your DLC.
I mean, isn't this the same thing as Angry Birds? I mean, isn't the Call of Duty model the same as the Angry Birds model? They're charging for a free experience. I mean, I'm sure they have a demo version that can compare to the light version. It's different ratios, right? It's paying $60 to actually get into the experience versus, you know, $1 to $3 for an Angry Birds. Is it simply that it's just not worth that much value? Is it not worth $60 if Call of Duty was a $5 to buy an experience, and then you had to pay an extra another $5 to $10 on top of that? It'd be more worth it, or even 30-30 split?
It depends on the price of it all. I mean, there are some DLC that I've seen in some big, you know, high-end AAA games that cost up to like $20, and I'm just like, I've never had to do that in my life. In terms of buying a expansion for that type of game.
What's the most you've ever paid for a DLC?
Oh, my God.
Because I've put $20 into a game.
Like, maybe $35. I forget what...
One purchase?
It was the game I had bought, which was, like, 60-some-odd. Right. And then the DLC I bought was, like, 30... I forget the game, but... It was some first person experience I had. I haven't touched it since, but I remember when I was sitting at my computer. It was on Steam. I was sitting at my computer. I was watching. I was like, I have to pay $35 for this thing. I wanted, and I bit the bullet, and I got my experience out. I was like, this was not worth it. I had fun, but it was not worth the money. And a big contributor to that experience is that I need to weigh what they're offering me in terms of the price. Because, like, when it comes to Angry Birds, it's true, yeah. They're like, what, pennies on the dollar for their expansion stuff? I'll throw down a couple bucks for that, because honestly, I'm just on my phone and I just want to kind of flip through it real quick and buy the DLC, have an extra experience when I'm on the train to like San Francisco or going home or something like that. Yeah, sure, why not? But when I, as busy of a person that I am, I don't necessarily have the time to sit down all the time and play this DLC, and I feel like a lot of the times I'll get the most experience out of it when I am, like, because there's a lot of DLC either is for, like, you know, not online experience or like
it's just more content.
I want to sit down and be able to play it, and if I'm paying money to do that, I need to wait. Do I even have the time to like sit down and play this? And if I don't, like,
that's why mobile is so like good at doing that. Angry Birds is like perfect for that, because people will spend like, oh, this is only like 5 minutes of my day. I don't mind spending like the extra 90 cents. It's just 90 cents, or it's just an extra dollar, and I'll be playing it over and over and over and again.
It's like, reducing the risk, right?
Exactly.
If you don't know the game, it's a new IP, you don't know if it's any good, am I going to pay $35? I might pay it and then not like it. But for, you know, Angry Birds or something cheaper, when you're talking about that less than $5 range, well, what's the risk? Oh, I lost a few dollars and maybe it wasn't that great.
Right.
Which has opened up the possibility for new IP games to get popular. One of the reasons why mobile has kind of taken over the industry, and especially independent games, is that new titles can do very well there. Because the price point is so low, you can say, oh, well, my app's 99 cents and the big guy is 99 cents. What you think is a more fun game, rather than, well, you know, no one's going to spend $60 for an indie title. They just won't, unless it's got some amount of hype behind it that's crazy I've never seen before.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do you think it's going to be easier for new IP games? Or do you think when you're buying a game, does the IP matter to you if it's premium experience versus freemium? Are you more likely to buy Tetris because it's Tetris rather than paying for a new indie game? I mean, I guess it's kind of obvious.
I would go, even though I hate saying this, I would definitely go for the IP because I have that history. I know that it's like, I know what to expect. And the risk is lower. And
how much are you willing to spend on a new venture? Let's say a friend didn't recommend it to you.
Let's say
you see it in the App Store.
Okay.
It looks cool, whatever it is. It looks like a game that you can enjoy, well, we'll say for 5 hours or something like that. Just a random number atop my head.
Okay.
How much are you willing to risk to spend on it? 99 cents? $5?
Right.
$10? Can a game look cool enough to be worth $10?
Okay, yeah. So definitely with the mobile experience, I'm not willing to spend a lot of money on it. Like, on console games, I'll spend like the $60-$70 on a game, which I think is another like mentality of the market. You're willing to spend more on that console game. And then the mobile games, some of the detail in these games are like really good. Like, they could be console games, yet they're only like $3 or $4. And I say the most that I'd be willing to spend is like $10. Yeah. Even if I see it and I'm like, wow, this looks like incredible. It looks like the quality looks great. The artwork looks great. The story idea sounds amazing. I would be willing to spend $10. Nothing more than that, especially for mobile.
See, I find it's interesting because when you start playing a free game, most people are not willing to spend a cent on it. If I'm not willing to pay for a game, I'll play it for free. And then after I've played it for maybe months, you know, many, many game sessions, many, many hours, then I really enjoy it. Then how much I'm willing to invest in it goes up over time. Maybe at first I'm only willing to invest $1, but the developers keep adding more content, adding new features, then I might be willing to put in another $1, and it starts making apps as a service. Because that's, right. I think, where the most successful developers, or I should say the most profitable developers, are making apps as a service. What do you think about, do premium games act less as a service? They're already more of a release, and they never get updated? Or do you think that they have that same issue, where they have to constantly make new content in order for people to keep downloading them?
I guess it depends on whether they broke even or made a profit yet. That's the main question.
Well, I mean, breaking even is one aspect, right? But you can go from breaking even to making even more money. Say I make a game, it breaks even. Maybe I didn't put that much into it. Breaking even could be, you know, less than $1,000 for some developers.
Oh, yeah.
But if over time, if you add more and more content, your profitability goes up the more you put into it. Freemium gives the advantage that the more work you put in, the more people are willing to pay. But as a premium audience grows, you're only making money off people who haven't heard of your game yet. You're not going to continually make money off of those people unless you add some DLC.
Well, I honestly don't... Man, it's such a case... But it's so case by case to figure out where exactly a game should go. And ultimately it is up to, you know, the developers and, you know, whoever the hell publishes it to figure out whether they want to continue or not, and they figure out whether the game is doing well on its initial run, whether it's freemium or premium to do that. But when it comes to premium and whether it's like, you know, more work or not, I mean, I feel like, you know, it's something that we had mentioned earlier is that, you know, premium, you can just, like, you know, leave it there. You know, just take the game, make it go, and that's it, and hit your losses, and hopefully use that to get more. And I don't feel like it'd be that much more work to really get, you know, to make more money. I mean, at that point, I feel like it's more of what you can do on the marketing side of things and how you can, you know, cheese it up to everybody else. When it comes to, like, the premium side, oh, dude, no matter what you put into it when it's a premium, you're creating more content, and you need to figure out a marketing strategy not only to sell the game itself, but to sell everything else you make, because everything you had to put some amount of money into that. If you're not getting that back, and you don't have anything to say that, oh yeah, you know, I've made this much money back on it, whether it be, you know, the even or more, and I can go and continue this business or whatever future ventures I have. Well, it looks like I have more work to do until I can actually, you know, say that my time was worth putting into this game and into choosing the freemium model.
But when you have to do that with a premium game ahead of time, like all of that marketing work, all of that pushing work, isn't it just a matter of, do you do it before you launch or after you launch? And no matter what, you have to do some amount after. So is a premium experience easier to develop for than a freemium one? I would make a solid argument that they're about the same level of difficulty. Some might even say that premium's harder to make, because a freemium experience you can release with fewer features and iterate on it over time in public, develop in public, play test it in public, and make it better based on that actual feedback. Whereas premium, you kind of have to make it good enough to sell from the start, and that includes all aspects, including the marketing.
Oh, yeah. I think that depends on how much time you want to spend on your game. Like, yes. If this game is going to be your baby, like what your bread and butter, how you're going to be like making your main profit, then yeah, you're going to want to do the freemium. You have that testing for you, and then you can slowly build it because you were planning on building it the entire time. And so for like something that you're just doing on the side, or maybe it's like a mini game for your main game, I don't know, it's like a spin-off even, I would do those premium because you already know that it's going to be popular. At least you have this test subject group that you had with your freemium game or whatever, and then you just have this little tiny game that I care about, obviously, because I put time in it, but it's not what I'm focusing on for like my major game. So I'm just going to put it in premium, let it sit, and see what happens after that.
How much time do I need to put into a game for it to be profitable? If I only have, like, I can
don't we always forget to answer that question?
Well, no, I mean, I'm serious, right?
How much is your time worth?
You can make a game in 24 hours. You can make a decent game in 24 hours. You want to make a polished game?
That'll take a while.
A week to make a polished game.
Okay.
You say make a team 24 hours, you polish up. If it's simple, right, depends mm-hmm. on the kind of game you're talking about. I've seen people write, you know, huge novels in a weekend. You can turn that, you know, based on whatever tools you have available with Unity and all this and GameMaker.
Right. Yes.
So how much time can I put into a game and expect, like, what's too short? Oh, I only have a week to make this game. Well, premium's better, but if I have 6 months, freemium's better. Where's the line there?
I would say, because it's just so difficult, it's how much you worth your time as. Like, how much money is my time worth? And it would be, look at the games and the genre that you want to make and see the quality of those games. And it's like, I want to make like a puzzle-based 2D level shooter. Like Angry Birds. So you see, like, oh, you have to have the quality of Angry Birds to compete with Angry Birds, or you have to have the quality of those types of games to be successful.
Well, quality is just one aspect. I mean, you can have really professional art, you can have the physics engine, but I could remake Angry Birds. I mean, I couldn't redraw the assets, but from a coding perspective, I can remake Angry Birds in a couple hours.
Right. So
at that point, it's how many levels you have and how good those levels are and how long it takes to playtest those, mm-hmm. which I suppose is quality in itself, right? But Angry Birds, you can't really compare yourself to, I need to have 100-plus levels to start with. Well, that's not true. Angry Birds didn't even start with 100 levels.
Well, I was just saying, like, how smooth your physics is and, like, how well everything, like, meshes together. You can have, like, 10 decent levels and still get some money off of a premium game right there.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think you could sell a game with only 10 levels and not plan to update it. You might get a couple random sales, right? You'll get people downloading your game no matter what. If you put up an app in the store, even if you said for $100, over time, you'll average like one purchase somewhere along the line. Someone's going to click it without looking at the cost. But that doesn't count as actually selling it or making money with it or making it as a profitable business.
Well, actually, there's one game I feel that had I'm ballparking this, but I think it had around 10 levels, maybe a little more. It was the Mirror's Edge Nokia port for phones, and that only had around 10 levels, and I forget the sales on it, but that did make a bit of money.
Well, that's also Mirror's Edge, right? People
that's
wanted
a
to
known
play.
IP. Yeah. That's a known
wanted
IP.
People wanted to play it because they knew the console experience,
yes.
And even if it was a shorter experience, they wanted to have that on the devices.
Yes.
I mean, it's also interesting to know that I have that game, but I didn't pay for it because multiple times they had set it for free.
Really?
And I got it during one of those sales. And they had multiple ones of those sales, which made me think, because all of the blogs then said, oh, Mirror's Edge, this $10 game is now free. Which it made me think the overall strategy for it was to promote sales of the $60 console game.
Oh, yeah.
Because then all the news blogs were saying, oh, a $10 game became free. That becomes bigger news.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's actually talks about a premium strategy. So you have a game that's, say, $10, $15, but every other month, it's a dollar.
Or you have a free deal.
Even if it's not free, right? You have like a reduced cost deal, mm-hmm. and then you're making your money on those sales, and then you won't make much money for 3 to 6 months, and then you have a reason to have a sale again. Super Brothers Sword and Sorceries kind of did this in a way with their lunar cycles.
Yeah.
That game, the story of it involved the cycle of the moon. So I think it was every new moon or full moon,
the game
went on sale.
Yes. Which was actually pretty cool. When I had figured that out, it was actually really cool. Somebody had told me about that. I was like, really? And I had to just wait for a little bit. I had to like actually check my newspaper and see what it was and see what was on sale. I ultimately didn't get it. I still play. I need to. I really need to. But
it's a premium experience that made millions. It's totally worth looking at.
But I had purchased. I hadn't played it, but I purchased it because of that reason.
Well, that's another thing. How much marketing can you do? And then what type of marketing do you want to do? Because sometimes, depending on what your marketing strategy is, that just sells the game for you.
That's the definition of marketing, right? It's doing to sell it. Marketing matters more than everything. If you have a bad game but really, really good marketing, you'll make some amount of money.
Right. So then does freemium or premium, does that matter now if you have a really good marketing strategy? So then it's like, what type of marketing strategy
is it easier to market a freemium game because people can try it for free? It's harder to have that proposition of, oh, hey, try this. It costs you something. Whereas, oh, hey, try this. It costs you nothing. That's obviously easier to sell the latter.
I think it kind of depends. Because I mean, I know when I'm out at certain conventions or conferences, and people are always shoving things in your face about, you know, play your game or play this game or try this out for free. You know, no cost to you. I get annoyed. I can't stand it. And I'm just like, I don't want to thank you for letting me know. I want to try your game, but right now my focus is not on you. And ultimately, since I have that kind of thought about that game and I pull it out, I'm like, oh, I don't want to play this because, you know, it bothered me while I wasn't clearly in the mood. And I wouldn't say that it's so much easier to do that because some people have this mindset of, oh, it's free. And they say it's free, but there's always a catch. There's something in there that they're going to have to get money somehow, whether that be through ads, whether that be through buying something through, or like, in-game app purposes.
It might be sponsored, it's the Doritos game.
Doritos games or whatever the heck. But ultimately, there's some kind of a catch to it. And I wouldn't say it's easier, but it's definitely something that is a different challenge. I mean, there are sometimes I will buy into it because, you know, sometimes it sounds cool on the IP or the game design that they have presented. But it's definitely not a all-the-time-is-going-to-be-easier type deal.
Well, you don't want your monetization to be hostile either, right?
Like, no.
You're talking about it as a catch and, like, if your monetization is, well, I have to do this to make money, oh, I'm going to get you this way, it's not going to work as well as if it naturally flows. Like, oh, man, if you really like this game, there's an option to make money with it. I mean, yeah, it's a kind of a wording thing, but there are so many games out there to do the gotcha thing. I mean, it's kind of the Facebook model out there. Keep coming back to this game. You don't pay us money, your plants are going to die.
If anyone ever starts watching this is a warning for you guys. Learn from other people's mistakes.
Actually, was it a mistake? Because I know many companies that our budgets are making millions and millions of dollars doing that kind of gotcha stuff.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Now, those companies are way in popularity. There's certain bigger ones that are having some serious financial troubles right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it?
But they're still making money. But is it because that they're established, because they had hundreds of millions of users, because they were in there at that right moment, and now users don't like that? Can you do that business model of the gotchas and still make money? I'm not sure either.
I don't know.
You can.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a game that's going to, like, no matter what answer we give, like yes or no, there'll be an example of, oh, well, this new one came out and didn't work, or this new one came out and did work. I suppose it's just a new model that will be adopted. The problem is that every new game had this model because it was making more money than other games and it was easier to produce. It's kind of like reality television.
The greatest copycat of our generation as of right now.
Well, that Facebook-y freemium, you know, keep playing. I mean, I guess that's just arcade machines, right? You keep putting the quarter in the play.
Yeah.
It's not a new concept. But this model is a lot like reality television. It was cheaper to develop. A lot of people liked it. and it was easy to get out there and make money with it. So everyone started doing it, and everyone started making money. But I don't know if that's a great comparison. I don't, at least I don't want it to be, because now TV is full of reality TV. It never balanced back out.
But that also is like makes sense to the point where if you have a great idea, that great idea will help sell your game. Like, for the, we were just on TV, Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad. Those ideas were new and innovative, but they were so good that people were like, yes, we will pour money into you. We will help you in any way we can. It was really like a fan... brought it up.
But
well,
HBO,
at least for Breaking Bad.
I mean, we're talking indie here, right?
No, but really, Breaking Bad.
But the HBO example, right? I mean, Breaking Bad's not HBO.
Right.
But the idea of the premium content is, you know, the one percenter. Not everyone can make a Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad wasn't an indie idea. It wasn't something breaking out in the scene. What this reality TV brought in was Jackass. It was just a couple guys with a camera, an indie scene, very comparable to what's going on in the games industry right now, making something for cheap, and now... Jackass is this huge commercial venture with like probably over millions of dollars, but I don't know how much the new Jackass movies cost.
I can't speak on that, but I mean, like, Cops was definitely something that was considered like, you know, OG reality TV, and you know, kind of fed off of that, you know, just taking a camera and just, you know, walking around with people. And then, you know, I remember, what was it like, Flavor of Love or something like that? It was like Flavor was going in. I know that was the biggest one when reality TV really started to kick off, like in the way we know it now. And
well, those are just examples, right? Then now there's clones of those ones. There's always like the people going to fall in love movie, the people fall in love show, the people having to do a task, the, you know, the Project Runway's out there. Yes, I watch Project Runway, or I used to. I don't anymore. I know I used to in college. Actually, I like that.
I have to admit,
there's people that, you know, oh man, reality TV sucks. But actually, it's sometimes really fun to watch. It's sometimes fun to play. As much as you want to hate on a Farmville,
sometimes
it's
actually
a really fun game.
No, it is. I'm not going to die. I played it. It's fun. I like to play for. I will never dedicate my life to it because I have other games and other things I'd like to do with my life. But I will say that from playing it, I did enjoy it. Just like I enjoyed playing Mafia War. Just like I enjoyed playing all the other clones of all that stuff. And to go back on, like, you know, the models, like what works and what doesn't. You know, it just really. We said this like I don't know how many times. It just depends on really what exactly you're going for with your game and whether it's fit for the end goal you want to meet. I mean, if the bait and switch kind of thing to just kind of, you know, give you a game that, you know, you're trying to trick people into saying it's free and give it to them and whatnot, if that model works for you, and I'm not going to name exact companies here, but some companies do that a lot, and I played your games, and they're good games, but... and they work for them. But if, say, a company that I adore that has been constant with premium games starts to do that, and they've done, and some companies have done that, I feel inclined to like just be like, no, I'm not going to play your game. I mean, you guys, I feel like you guys have been doing this for such a long time. You guys haven't even led up to this. I don't feel like I want to be loyal to you anymore because I'm not sure this is going to work. And maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But from what I've seen from the company in question, which, again, I'm not going to name, theirs didn't work for me.
Not every game works for every business model. Every freemium game is going to work as a premium. I'm not going to pay $20 for Farmville. But, you know, some games, they're either by established brand or the kind of game it is, what's going on. It's not going to work either. So I guess going back to the original question, it really just depends on what kind of games you want to make.
Exactly.
And it's not a matter of you have to do one or the other to make money. It just has to be appropriate for what you're going to make.
What your model is.
Yeah, if you make your game design stupid simple and then you want to give players more content through repetition, maybe premium model's not too bad for you. If you want to make, you know, an AR experience with, you know, a story and complicated gameplay that, like, you know, rivals a Final Fantasy or something like that, maybe a premium model is ready for you or something like that. You know, weigh your options.
It just depends. It just all depends. And it's good to know what you want early on.
Yeah, exactly. You have to think about it as you're creating your app. You can't make the game and then figure out
I don't even know. I mean, you can, but
it just won't monetize.
Yeah,
as
and,
well.
You're, and you're and you're losing money that way. I mean, it's just sitting there. It's just sitting there, and you can't do anything with it yet. Yeah.
Was that phrase they say 80% sharpening the axe, 20% actually chopping down the tree? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I've heard similar phrases to that.
I'm sure the percentage is different. But
I always talk about that last 10% polish, right? You can get a game to 90% done. And it's just that last 10% matters more than anything
else. Or it's like 10% takes 90% of the time. Or that last 10% takes 90% of the time.
There's probably sayings in every language.
Yeah, right. Always
doing the same thing.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So now I want to talk about games we've been playing lately.
Ooh,
you know, indie games, AAA titles. You know, I want to go out there in the first episode be like, oh, I've been playing this cool indie game lately. But to be honest with you, I've been stuck on GTA 5. It's a very, very fun game. It's so much better, in my opinion, than 4. It's more in line with San Andreas. It's kind of a San Andreas 2.
And people love the hell out of the game. I did, too.
Yeah. I love San Andreas.
So I've been having a lot of fun going through that. What about you?
I haven't played GTA 5 yet. I've been watching playthroughs of it, and oh wow, I can't tell you how much I just want to buy the game. I'm not sure if I'm going to get it now, because I have other things I want to spend my money on, but yeah. I am going to get it. I so am. I can't wait to put it in my PS3. One game I have played recently, and I just love to play this game train rides home is a Dust Force by Hitbox. Mm-hmm. Hitbox team. Those guys are awesome and their music is amazing. And I've almost beaten that game because I'm not sure if you guys have heard of Super Meat Boy.
Yes.
Team Meat. So yeah. So it's same like that. You know, repetition. You know, timed kind of thing. Get past everything one and done. I said I love this type of game, but that Dust Force in question happens to be something that I really love for the art style. It's really fluid. Very simplistic in its art style, but yet still has so much range into what it can do. And although it moves, you know, lightning fast, you still feel like, you know, there's full movements happening. And it was Hitbox Team's like first game, and I can't even remember how I had heard about it, like because that game had only made around a little over $7,000 since its release last year. That little.
I'm surprised. It seems like my entire friend circle plays that game.
No, for real. But aren't they all developers?
They're all developers.
Wait, how big is your friend circle? Yeah. And then, wait, really, is it all just the
exactly.
same
playing
so, each other's games?
I'd be very surprised if they've made that little. I mean, considering Team Meat has made well over a million.
I'm yeah. Sure oh, yeah. And I can't remember how I heard about it, but I'm just glad that I did. And I still play it to this day. And I guess on a side note, I'm also playing for the first time Lone Survivor on the PS3, and it's scary. Really, cool. It's scary.
What kind of games have you been playing, Catherine?
And I haven't been playing that many games lately because I've been really busy. But the game that Tobiah has recommended for me is called Brothers.
Absolutely.
Which is a really
and
good
finally
game.
I've downloaded it last night and I didn't get a chance to play it because I was really tired and went to bed. But I will play Brothers, and the next time we meet, I will tell you what I thought about it.
I've been bugging her for about a month now every time I see her.
Actually, yeah.
Have you played Brothers yet? Have you played Brothers yet? Have you played Brothers yet? It is an incredible game experience.
Yes.
And it does things that I've seen no other game do.
Right,
but I don't want to go any more depth than that because you just can't spoil the experience.
Yeah. I've played a good chunk of it, like in the beginning, and I know mm-hmm. what it happened. And yeah, you just know nothing you want to give away.
Yeah,
Brother, I feel like it is treated just as much of a taboo as like Breaking Bad spoilers.
Oh, okay.
Which can't really happen.
That's the
best. If you talk about what happens in Brothers,
okay,
spoilers of any kind.
Don't spoil anything for me or anyone else in watching or listening.
All right, so if you have anything suggestions for us of new show topics, questions you want to see answered, not spoilers for Breaking Bad, you can email us at show@beindienow.com.
Are we going to show it like a little dongle?
What was you saying?
We're going to like do like a little thing.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Like
we'll put a link on the screen, and also you can scroll down below
like
and
click
just click
here,
it right there.
There.
So that email address is show@beindienow.com.
I'm trying to think.
Basically, not I-N-D-Y, right? I-N-D-I-E. I can't believe I'm...
There you go.
Threw me
you
off there.
You
right.
got it. You
yes.
got it.
You
have
to go to beindienow.com to look at our website and see future episodes and when we'll be live streaming. If you want to find more about me, you can read at tobiahmarks.com, my name.com. That's my personal blog. Or get me at tobiahmarks on Twitter.
For me, I've got a Twitter handle. It's at Devane Martinez. That's DAVAIN Martinez. I don't frequent it too often, but I do if people do respond to me. And if you have any questions about, you know, design or just want to, you know, kind of shoot the breeze, yeah, why not?
All right. And my Twitter handle is KatVHarris. And, yeah, I have random stuff. Just retweet or tweet me, and I'll tell you how Brothers is going. No spoilers, I promise. But, yeah, that's how you can contact me.
Yeah. All right.
Oh yeah. By the way, thanks for having us on the first episode.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I wanted to say the beginning of the episode, but you know we had to get through it. So yeah, it's awesome to be here on the first one. You know, I feel very honored.
I'm glad you guys can make it.
Yeah, invite us to talk about games more. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes. We'll hopefully be doing this a lot more. All right. Go out, make some games.
See you later.